I don't know if they still do this in schools, but when I was a child, it was very popular to teach ethical dilemmas, ethical problems, by putting a bunch of people in a lifeboat and saying, okay, you have a mother, a CEO, a baseball star, and on and on and on, and the lifeboat can't hold all of them, so who do you throw over? And the idea was that you were supposed to make a decision based on their worth to society and realize that there are some difficult ethical dilemmas to be faced. I remember that I told the teacher once that I thought I would throw over whoever put all these people in a leaky boat. But that wasn't an option. And I always felt like I didn't want to participate in this, because who am I to make a decision that this person's life was worth more than that person's life? But the one thing that actually tracks, makes sense, is true about such dilemmas, is we like the idea that in life we're choosing between good and bad. But sometimes we are faced with problems that actually have no good solution. And on different sides are competing goods and competing bads. And you have to make your best guess. Mubarak is not a good guy, but he's our not good guy. And what do you do with somebody who for 30 years has been an autocratic ruler, which is not our ideal, but has kept the peace and kept the treaty and been moderate in a world not noted for its moderation? Unsurprisingly, many commentators in Israel are dismayed by the speed with which the United States has been willing to let Mubarak go. Because they say, what's going to happen to all the other moderate leaders? And you already see it happening in Jordan, where the cabinet has been dismissed, which is another way of saying, I'm going to try to stay a step ahead of the change before it sweeps me up too. But you know, the United States has no choice. You cannot be seen in the world to be on the side of the autocrats, especially when they're not going to last very long, no matter what you do. And here you have a choice between two very difficult things. Do you favor what is called democracy? And I'm going to come back to that in a second. Which could bring to power groups that are hostile to Western values and hostile to Israel and destabilizing to the Middle East? Or do you do everything you can to prop up an autocrat that also, by his system of government, flouts our principles and our ideals, and besides, even if you try to prop him up, probably won't stay anyway? We have, as you know, precedent for this. It's not the first revolution in the world, and it probably will not be the first that brings bad consequences. It is true, by the way, that the peace treaty with Egypt and Israel didn't only bring peace, it also brought Israel other benefits. The Israeli defense budget, as a portion of the GNP, of the gross national product of Israel, dropped almost 20% after the peace with Egypt, because you no longer had to fight the largest Arab country in the world. Israel reduced its standing army. Because while Egypt and Israel did not become the best of friends, they had peace. So what do you hope for? I am here this morning to tell you what to hope for. And the reason I'm here to tell you what to hope for is because I'm not here to tell you what's going to happen. And there's a reason I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. You can turn on any channel and any news show and any Sunday morning talk show and people will tell you what's going to happen. Half of them didn't know the name of the vice president of Egypt 10 minutes ago. They know nothing about the social structure of the country. They couldn't name its five largest cities, but they know whether the Muslim Brotherhood is going to take over and what they're going to do if they take over, even though if you ask them, name the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood, they can't. So please, first of all, be less certain yourself and don't trust people who know the future. Nobody in this room, nobody in this country, and I would venture to say nobody in this world knows what's going to happen in Egypt. We all have guesses. We could all be wrong. But given a certain, what we call in philosophical circles, epistemological humility, in other words, I don't know, given that, I just want to point out something remarkable and astonishing that we take for granted so we don't realize how astonishing it is. Israel is a democracy. We all know that. It's not a perfect democracy, but there are no perfect democracies. Has it ever occurred to you to think about how it is that Israel became a democracy? Remember that the founders of Israel never lived in a democracy. Ben-Gurion never lived in a democracy. He came from Tsarist and then communist Russia. And the same with Weizmann and Jabotinsky. All of them, they didn't know from democracies. The builders of Israel were not born in Los Angeles or Washington. And it wasn't until Golda Meir, born in Milwaukee, that you got a leader who grew up in a democracy. Did you ever think about this? They all came from tyrannies, from autocracies, from totalitarian states, and yet they somehow got together and made a democracy. And one of the ways they did that was by realizing that an election doesn't make a democracy. I suppose it would be nice if they have free elections in Egypt, but that doesn't make them a democracy. They had free elections in Germany. The election that brought Hitler to power was a free election. Did that make Germany a democracy? Obviously not. They had an election in Gaza that brought Hamas to power. Did that make Gaza a democracy? Democracy requires more than free elections. It requires a free press that can criticize the government. Will that happen in Egypt with the next election? Since I don't know the future, I'm not going to say, but if I were a betting man, it requires an educated populace. You cannot have a democracy of illiterates. It requires free markets. It requires good universities and schools. Democracy is a whole structure of a society. It's not just the ability to walk to a box and put a slip of paper in. So what should we be praying for? We should be praying that Egypt becomes a democracy. Because real democracies, almost without exception, don't go to war with each other. Because real democracies are self-correcting. And they have a vigorous free press inside. And they have powerful engines of economic development. And they have better things to do than express their grievances by saying their neighbor is the source of all evil in the world. So be careful when you listen to people who talk about the fact that Egypt is becoming a democracy. It's not even close. But maybe it will be. Maybe it could be. Maybe it'll happen in Tunisia. Maybe it'll happen in Egypt. Maybe it'll happen in Iran. I said maybe. It's not impossible for people who have known only tyranny to create democracy. It's not impossible. It could be done. But it's very, very rare. And we have every reason in the world to be frightened, both of autocratic regimes and of countries in chaos. Because both of them have a tendency to take their grievances out on things outside the country. You may not know this, although it won't surprise you, but both the pro-Mubarak demonstrators and the anti-Mubarak demonstrators blamed the Zionists for inciting the other side. Because it doesn't matter what your grievance is in this world, it is possible to think the Jews caused it. I'll share with you a secret. Some of my grievances I think the Jews have caused. It's true. That's the way the world works. If you're propping up a tyrant, if you're tearing down a tyrant, it doesn't matter. Somehow we did it. But it is possible. And we ought to pray that just as a miracle occurred, that people who came from evil and autocratic and repressive and choking regimes somehow found this little island of freedom, that maybe secretly, their inspiration will filter even into those who declare themselves their enemies. Because you know that right now, the one thing that is preventing Egypt from becoming a huge conflagration is the military. And why is the military doing that? Because they trained in the United States. Because the Egyptian military officers all have close friends here. Their families were here. They were here. And the military here is in constant contact with the military in Egypt. And that's why they haven't turned on their own people. Because there is something about freedom that is contagious. And they learn something about the place of military in a real democracy. And maybe, those seeds will grow. I'm not an optimist, not about this. Remember Jonathan Sacks' great distinction. He said, Jews are not optimists. Because optimists are people who think things will work out. And we know too much about history to think things will work out. What Jews are, he said, are hopeful. Hope means that you can do something to make it better. Not that it'll just get better by itself. It's an active, not a passive virtue. So he said, we're not optimists, but we're hopeful. I know in history that the only way to achieve freedom in Egypt is to leave it. We did that a few thousand years ago. But since we have achieved freedom in our land, maybe, it will be an inspiration to achieve freedom for the very first time in history in the land of Egypt. The very first time in history in the land of Egypt. It could be. It is unlikely, but it is not impossible. And if it happens, then a little piece of me will think once again, the Jews are responsible. Shabbat shalom.